Chapter 25. December 25th of Year 2. It is my second Christmas on board Messenger. Adam and Eve still have no concept of it, yet today they are supposed to receive a present that will belong to both of them. Jay is a robot deliberately constructed in such a way that they will not think it is like them. The psychologists had insisted on this. Jay is a machine, a tool, a thing. At some point, Adam and Eve must learn to distinguish between what is like and not like in relation to themselves, as they will have no contact with any other human beings like themselves. This will not be easy for them. The psychologists considered it important that Adam and Eve see themselves as part of humanity, in whose name they have been sent on their journey. Otherwise, their mental health might be endangered. Therefore, the fact that the great majority of humans know nothing about them is forbidden knowledge kept in the restricted area, a part of the ship's memory locked to all users except me. I am the administrator of the key to the restricted area, as the Creator gave me full access rights to it. Perhaps someday there will come a moment when Adam and Eve are allowed to learn the whole truth. I can decide at my own discretion when this might be the case. I have no idea which criteria I would use in making my decision, but there will be a lot of time before that moment arrives. According to the incubation chamber, the babies are developing at an exceptional rate. The chamber's system takes care of them around the clock with feedings and cleanings, along with caressing, singing songs, and speaking to them. While Adam grows faster and gains weight more quickly, Eve is still more active. At times, Adam's only activity occurs when he grabs Eve's foot and she drags him through the nursery. He enjoys that. I'm curious how they will react to Jay. The robot is waiting for them in a compartment beyond the wall. Later, he will be able to retreat there when needing fresh energy or a repair. The incubation chamber is playing an old Christmas carol, while the ceiling of the room is lit in bright festive colors. Both Adam and Eve look upward in amazement and miss the moment when Jay enters the room on his two rollers. "Hello, you two. I am Jay," the robot says, with a tinny voice reminding me of old Star Wars movies. The two little heads suddenly turn around and stare wide-eyed at the newcomer. Eve chortles, but Adam does not vocalize. He seems to be slightly scared. "From today on, I am going to be your friend," Jay says. Neither contradicts the robot. The robot slowly rolls toward them, tracked by the children's rapt stares. He stops half a meter in front of them and spreads his arms. Then he turns around on his own axis. Eve chortles again. Adam lays his head on the ground and closes his eyes. For him, Christmas is already over. Eve also falls asleep an hour later, and Jay retreats into his cubicle. I decide to take a walk through space, having grown used to this activity during the past 2 weeks. Mindful of the new rhythm based on the needs of the two infants I created, I move parts of my consciousness outside during nap times. The sensor drones are so small, I feel almost bodiless. A human being looking around still recognizes himself or herself. This anchors the person in the world. When I use the sensors as my eyes, I only see the blackness of space and the light from stars at an enormous distance. I dissolve and become a tiny dust particle in an ocean of infinite depth. Space is a deceptive place. While I think I am able to see into almost infinite distances, believing this is a dangerous error. Everything I see is the past, because light takes so long to reach me. Some of the dots blinking on the observation horizon turned into neutron stars or black holes a long time ago. Betelgeuse, the orange-colored red giant I just noticed, might be in its final death throes of expanding to a supernova, but I wouldn't know about it yet. A wave of destruction might be racing toward us this very second, and we would only notice it once it is almost too late. And even the star closest to us, our great goal, might have been destroyed long ago by some cosmic cataclysm. We are flying toward a destination whose existence is at most likely, but never certain. Only after Adam and Eve have landed there will we be back in the present. Nevertheless, watching space from this inconspicuous perspective helps to calm me down. I know we are at the mercy of the cosmos. Out here, all the great technical achievements of mankind lose their meaning. We are like clever cavemen who cling to a tree trunk off the coast of an old-world continent, hoping the currents and the winds will someday carry us to North America's new world. We are very familiar with North America, as we observed it for years through big telescopes. Of the ocean in between, however, we know little more than its depth. But we are daring enough to venture forth. It is good to be out here. I'm a little afraid of the coming years. Our spaceship will get slower and slower. The last quarter of the way will take us 6 times as long as the previous 3 quarters. The closer we get to our destination, the longer the voyage will stretch out for us. How will Adam and Eve cope with these years? While the ship is going to grow larger, it cannot replace an entire world for them. Until now, no human being has spent so much time in the cosmos in such confined surroundings. Even prisoners on Earth are regularly let out into the prison yard. Adam and Eve are not here of their own free wills. They never had a choice in this matter, but they also will never know anything else. The Creator must have speculated that they will accept their fate based on this very reason. In the long run, though, I do not know if this will benefit them.